Hey there, this is Pastor Stu, and I just wanted to personally thank you for being part of our church online. We hope these podcasts have been an encouragement and challenge to you, and we further hope this podcasting will complement your involvement in the local church as you give, serve, love, and are accountable to a church family wherever you are. If you want any more information about Encounter or how to get involved here, please click on the contact link or the giving link if you'd like to get involved in that way. Now let's get into the Word together.
Chapter 4. I want to start off, though, by kind of telling you a little story that as I was thinking through and praying through this last week, my mind kept going back to, and my heart kind of kept going back to, about 10 years ago, I had this opportunity to go to one of the most remote areas, probably the most remote area I've ever been to in the world in my life. We went on a mission trip, and I led about 15 college students and a few other people as well to Bolivia. And we went to the Andes Mountains. I don't know if any of you have ever been over 15,000 feet, but that's kind of where we went. And if you've ever been that high, it's just a different world completely. Nothing grows there. Very little grows there. It's very hard to get there. So when we got to this part of Bolivia, we were at a place that it was a 15-hour drive from the nearest airport, okay? So that tells you how remote it was. And about 10 years earlier, there was some major flooding in this part of the Andes Mountains. And what ended up happening was there's this one village at the top, and maybe not the very top, but the part that we were in, the village was at 15,000 feet, okay? And so like I said, we drove forever there, but there's a lot of lower-lying villages that were all around it, and there was some major flooding in this particular village that had destroyed all these lower villages and had killed a lot of people, and what little crops they did have, they don't have a whole lot, but what little crops they did have were completely destroyed. They don't have, in this area, you see in the pictures, okay, good, yeah. That was a hat they gave me. They made it. It didn't fit on my head. They're littler than we are. Nothing grows at 15,000 feet, including the people. I'm not kidding you. They were considerably smaller. I was pretty sweet there. Yeah. Anyway, so we were at this area, and the flooding was so bad, a lot of the lower villages were destroyed, and they moved up to this upper village, and they were just asking the government to help. The government's response was, "You guys are too far away. We can't help you." So what ended up happening was we had some missionary friends that were there, and I wasn't part of this group. This was the original group that went here. And the missionary friends called back to our church in Auburn, Alabama. And they called there and they said, "We need help. We have these villages that are all nearby and people are dying." Worse than that, they have no access to regular clean water. They have no access to any technology at all. They have no electricity. They have no running water. They have no Bibles. They don't even have the Bible in their native language and all these sorts of things. We need to reach this community. And so what ended up happening was they called out for help, and they got together, and they decided to care for this village. And so what they did was they got together, and this group of people in America got together and just kind of started praying for this village, talked with the missionaries very regularly. How can we invest in some locals there? They got their minds together. They got their hearts together. They began surrendering their hearts to, "Lord, just remake my heart. However you want to remake my heart. We can't do everything. We can't move here and we can't make this village entirely new. We can't prevent future flooding. There's a lot of things that we can't do. But what can we do? God, what should our heart be for these people? Will you mold our hearts?" And so this group together, what they did is they figured out their abilities. They figured out their resources. And then they decided to get off the couch and get to work. And so fast forward, basically what's happening is this group of people, 10-ish people, got together, pursued their heart, pursued the Lord's heart, pursued, God, how do you want us to make this place better? And what was on their mind was, we need to make this village prosper in every area. And as we make the village prosper, we believe that as we help it economically, we believe that as we help it even get running water and little things like that, if there's little things that we can do to help it prosper, we believe that will earn us the right to share the gospel in this little village, okay? And we believe that there's people that are dying, that are going to hell. We believe that we need to be the light. God has called us to do this, so how can we do this? And so that was their heartbeat. So fast forward 10 years. They didn't start off by doing a million things. They started off by doing one thing and by doing one thing well. And then that one thing turned into another thing and turned into another thing. And 10 years later, this tiny little village, what has happened to it is they didn't even have, like I said, running water, electricity. They didn't have any of that. Now they have running water for the most part. Now, in a lot of areas, they have a well that works and they can get to, and they even can access it. They even, there is a section of it, the generator works, and that they have some generated electricity for when they need it. They built a school there, and what ended up happening, when they built the school there, all the neighboring villages that were the lower-lying villages, they would send their kids there to the school so they could actually get an education. Then when they started seeing people graduate from the school and actually get real jobs, and some of them actually began to get some medical jobs and things like that, there was this huge need for a nurse, so we built a medical clinic. I'm going to use the term we. I had nothing to do with any of this stuff. That church that I was involved in and these groups before us. So we built a medical center there. Decided maybe we need to pay their salary to be the nurse, and we're going to help them through med school. So we were able to do that. Then after that, after building the school, after building the med clinic, it was at the same time we had started some little churches, or a little church that was there, and we decided, let's build a church building so that they can meet a little bit more regularly. So now there's a school, there's a nurse, a medical clinic, now there is a church. At this point, they decided the school, they're sending so many people here, and it takes so long for these kids to get to the school, it would take them 3 hours to get to school, okay? You guys complain about waking up at 7. And so it would take them 3 hours to get to school, and so what they said was, why don't we build some dorms? Now, I'm going to use this term dorm very loosely, but let's build a place where these kids can stay Monday through Friday, and so we can put the school in, or maybe even Monday through Thursday, and let's cram it into 4 days, and then they can go home for the weekends. And when they did that, then all of a sudden, all these people started coming, and more people were getting schooled. And what you started to see happen was these people went from not having really anything at all, having no hope, having no life, where the government would even say, it's too far away, we can't get to you guys, we don't care about you. Now, they have life. Now you can see in the kids' faces joy. Now they've met Jesus, and the people are sharing Christ with the local people around. So when I went, this is about 10 years into the process. As I said, I got to take a couple trips there with a bunch of college students. And so what we did is we said, okay, what are the needs? We talked to the missionaries. We started praying for the village. Lord, we know that this is a group that we have a connection with. Most people don't want to go there because it's really hard to get there. College students, yeah, why not? It's kind of fun. It's kind of adventurous. Maybe we could take a group there that other groups wouldn't go. So we start asking them, what are their needs? Well, two needs came up. Number one, 6 months of the year in Bolivia, and I think there was a picture of this, there was these low-lying areas, and there's water that goes through the ravine, and that's at about low-lying at 8,000 feet, okay? And so what ends up happening is during the rainy season, which is 6 months of the year, the ravine is completely full, and it's about a 300-foot cross to get from one side to the other, and the only way you can get from one side to the other is by hiking to this one little thing, and basically they have these wires that you could walk across. And then the previous year, there you go. in the previous year to make that cross. That was the only place that you could cross during the rainy season. It was very deep and very swift, and they don't really swim real well either in the mountains. Imagine that. They don't have swimming lessons. Maybe we could have done that next time. But you can see right here from this picture, you can see this was all they had. And it's this makeshift, and four people had died trying to cross in the previous year. And so we're like, this isn't good. So during the rainy seasons, they noticed that if there was a someone that needed medical care, they couldn't even get it if they lived on the other side, even though it was a long hike. The other thing they noticed is if there was kids that were needed the schooling, they wouldn't get school for 6 months of the year. And so they said, we really could use a bridge. And the other thing that we really are noticing is all the shepherds that were all nearby, they started noticing that their sheep and their goats were not as healthy for some reason. There's some sort of disease going through. And that's their livelihood. That's where they get all their wool for making all their clothing. That would be where they would meat, milk, things like that. And so they said, those are our two big issues that we're having a hard time with. So we got together as a group and with some of the leaders over there, with some of the leaders of the missionary organization that were near Auburn. And we got together and we started praying about, Lord, what is your desire for these people? And we were convinced, just like I told you guys last week, we are convinced that Encounter Church, we need to bring shalom. We need to bring flourishing, universal peace and flourishing to Evansville. And as we do that, we believe that we will get the right to speak life and to speak the truth of the gospel and to bring the spiritual flourishing element of that into the lives of the people in Evansville. Well, in the same way, they were saying, we feel like we need to just bring shalom and we need to help them flourish. So can we help out these two ways? So we got together and we found some. Auburn is in one of the majors they have. It's very similar to Purdue. And they have a lot of engineering students there. And they also have a veterinary school there. And so what we did is we talked to some of the engineering people and some of the professors and some of the locals. And we said, they have this need for a suspension bridge to get across where they can just walk across. If we had a rope bridge, a suspension bridge, something that's a little bit safer, they need to get across for 6 months of the year. How can we do that? So we started looking at things. Well, you can't exactly take trucks up there. You can't exactly take wire up there. There's a lot of things you can't get there. The only way you can get anything there is like military helicopter, okay? And even that's a little bit scary at that height anyway. So it was, we could probably get a few things in the back of pickup trucks or by a helicopter that would be up there, and that's all you got. So they started working through all these things, and we had a bridge maker, and we had some engineers from Auburn that said, we're going to take this on, and we're going to do it. And so these engineering people got this all together, and the bridge maker actually came with us. He builds bridges, you know, on regular roads for a living. And he's like, this will be a fun little experiment. So he actually came with us. The other guys were like, I'm not going there, but I'll tell you how to do it. And so our job was, okay, get your college students to dig in this rock, which is really fun, let me tell you. Your job is going to be, you're going to try to get the villagers to take down this wire that is really, really thick and really, really heavy from 15,000 to 8,000 feet. And that we had the villagers do all that because it wore us out even walking around up there and hiking around up there. But so we got this plan together and helped build this bridge. And then we talked to the veterinary students and said, hey, guys, we know there's some Christian vets. Would you guys be interested in taking this trip? So we took four or five vets with us, and they would go through all these remote villages and started treating all the flocks. And it was crazy. I got to do a little bit of both, and there'd be these big rams in my job because I didn't know anything about veterinary. They're like, what you need to do is you need to take these real big ones that are like 80 to 100 pounds and just grab them by the neck and hold them down so that we can give them their medicine. I'm like, yes. And so I got to wrestle with rams all day. It was awesome. And then I smelled really good. Anyway, why am I telling you all this? I'm telling you all this because this place was a ridiculously rough place, the roughest place I've ever been in my life. We camped. We took everything we had with us for 8 days. We didn't have any access to water. We had to clean our own water. We had to bring MREs to eat. We took everything with us on our backs, and that's what we had for 8 days straight. And when we hiked down, there's no life at all that was flourishing other than the people in these villages that we're building into. And we went down there, and we began to pray about it. They didn't have clean water. They didn't have Jesus. How can we serve them that we might bring Jesus to them? And the reason I'm bringing this story to you is because it's easy for us to relate to a mission trip where that's our goal, right? Okay, our goal is to take our lives out of where we are, transport our lives completely into this place for 2 weeks, and it's easy to think, how can we for 2 weeks really live on mission? And we can do what we would do every morning is we would pray, we would have quiet times together, we would meet as a group in the morning and in the evening, talk about our days. We would say, hey, this person over here, I saw that they have a big need. How can we reach it? We would share Christ with people just very normally out of our everyday life. But for some reason, it's easy for us to do that when we're thousands of miles away from home. But how does that translate into our everyday life? How do we live on mission in a comfortable place, let's just say? And I think for me, and maybe it is for you, maybe it's just me, but I think for me, I have a hard time making that transition from living on mission while I'm on a mission trip to living on mission when my couch is really comfortable. Okay? And how do I live on mission in my everyday life when I've got responsibilities? How do I live on mission in my everyday life when I've got to be here forever? All these sorts of things. So the problem that we have is it's very easy to look at the world around us and say, man, this world's falling apart. I can't believe these people. I can't believe this groups of people. Why would these people vote that way? Why would these people do that? It's very easy to look at the sin around us, to look at the decay of the city around us and say, I can't believe that they would. I don't understand why they do this. And it's very easy to criticize. It's very easy to judge. It's very easy to go to a poorer part of town and say, oh, you know, I'm so glad. Why don't they just get jobs? Why don't they just get a better education? They've been given all this stuff. It's very easy to do that. Another thing it's very easy to do is it's very easy to go there for your 2 hours and then criticize the ones that don't go there. Can I be honest about that? I can't believe the church isn't doing more. I can't believe the church voted this way. I can't believe the church did this. I can't believe that these people in the church are such hypocrites. It's very easy to judge a community. It's very easy to look at the problems of a group of people, to judge the church. But what I want us to see is it's very right to get off the couch and do something about it. Are we as a church, are we as Christians more interested in doing the easy thing, or are we more interested in getting off the couch and doing what is right? And I want to tell you, it's very easy to know what is right without doing what is right all the time if you're not doing something that's necessarily wrong. See, I'm convinced that the couch is killing an entire generation of Christians. I could go further and say I believe maybe the computer screen is killing an entire generation of Christians. And what I mean by that is it's very easy to sit on the couch and be lazy and look down upon everyone else, judge everyone else, justify the 2 hours that we spent, not see the way that those people spent their 2 hours of service or whatever. It's very easy to allow the couch to make us lazy, or computer screen, social media, and just to be able to say, well, I did my part because I yelled at people for 2 hours on social media. It was awesome. I brought awareness. I'm an influencer. you know? And so it's very easy to justify that. But the Bolivia team, what I want you to see is they didn't solve every problem. They really didn't. And actually, we went there. It was kind of cool to go there on the 10-year anniversary. That was when our team went, and they celebrated the 10-year anniversary, and they thanked us for everything we'd been doing for 10 years. I'm like, dude, I just brought a group. I haven't been doing anything. But what I want you to see is this team, what they did, they couldn't do everything. And in talking with some of the people on that team, they said, all we did was we just really wanted to listen to the heart of God and allow our hearts to be conformed to his heart. Second thing we did was we got together as a group because we knew that as a group we could do a whole lot of stuff that we couldn't do individually. Well, why is that? Well, the third thing we did is we combined our resources. We looked at every resource we had. We looked at what we could do. What gifts do I have? What time do I have? What talents do I have? And as a group, we recognized that we could do a whole lot more. And then we just got off the couch and did something. And this is what that team did. And I want you to see right now that this is what we need to be doing as a church. Last week, we kind of talked through our mission of Encounter Church. We're in a series called Why. And in our series called Why, we're looking at what the church is supposed to be about as a universal church. Okay, biblically speaking, what is the church's job? What is our role? What are we looking like? And instead of just throwing things at the church and staining the bride of Christ, perhaps we should build it up and perhaps we should learn what we are supposed to be doing. And second of all, how do we as Encounter Church do our part and what is our role? Because our role will be different than other churches even in town. Okay? Well, so that's why we're doing this series. And last week, for those of you that were not here, and I can see there's a few that were not here, we looked through Jeremiah 29. We looked at 27, 28, and 29. And basically what has happened in this particular passage, I'll give you a quick recap. The God's chosen people have been taken into captivity by the Babylonians, okay? And Babylon was, I'm going to use modern terms, was non-Christian pagan nation that wanted to take these religious Christian people. They're not Christian, obviously Christ isn't there yet. But he's taken all the Christians and they're trying to educate them with their ways, make them eat their foods, make them live in their culture and conform their very Christian worldview to the Babylonian worldview, which is a pagan worldview, okay? Obviously not Christian, you got the point. So this is what their goal was, and so the false prophets began saying in Jeremiah 27 and 28, here's what we need to do. We're only going to be here for a couple years. Let's hide. Hide from this post-Christian culture. Again, using words that they didn't use, but they're saying hide because this culture is very evil. Hide from it. And God, through Jeremiah, and I'll just read this part, says, thus says the Lord of hosts, I'm in Jeremiah 29 verses 4 through, we'll just go through 8. Thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, to all the exiles whom I have sent into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. You see that? Whom I have sent is God speaking. So God's still in charge. Oftentimes we look at the world around us, the culture around us, we say, there's no way, is God even real? There's no way this could be happening if God was real. Thus says the Lord to all the exiles whom I sent into exile. I took you out of the promised land. And I know I promised it to you, and you'll be back there, trust me. But I've sent you into exile. I'm still in charge. And what he says to them, build houses, which takes a long time. Live in them. It takes more than 1 or 2 years to build a house and live in them. He doesn't say rent. And he also doesn't say go to the caves, which the false prophets are saying. He says build houses, live in them, plant gardens. That takes time. Eat their produce. Take wives, have sons and daughters. That takes a lot of time. Take wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage that they might have sons and daughters. Oh, great. We're not talking 1 or 2 years now. We're talking like a generation or two. And what he's saying to them, he says, multiply there and do not decrease, but seek the welfare, seek the shalom, seek the universal flourishing of the city where I have sent you into, and pray to the Lord on its behalf, for in its shalom, you will find your shalom. Okay? So what he's saying here is he's saying, I have you in a culture that is very different from the Christian culture that you're used to. I put you there. I'm still in charge. We're good. Invest in it. Pray for it. Build it. Bring shalom to it. And as you do that, you're going to find that my kingdom is going to come there as well. And so this is what we talked about. He says, move into the city, keep your spiritual identity. And what I'm going to say is the reason why we talked about that last week, and I'm even taking the time to reiterate it this week, is he's saying to us, church, in a post-Christian society that's moving further away from Christian principles, he's saying we need to encounter church, invest in this city. We need to bring shalom to this city. We believe that we are called to do that. We've got to see Evansville through kingdom glasses. We've got to see our trips that we take to wherever it is through kingdom glasses. And we've got to say, God, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. I've heard someone pray that somewhere before, I forgot. And so we sang to do that, but what ends up happening is when we're in Bolivia, when we're on a mission trip, when we're focused on mission, we do it. But when we get home, what do? We tend to get lazy, right? I know I do. I get home from a long day at work. I want to sit on the couch for a little bit. I want to do nothing. And this is kind of what we do because we work so hard in one place that we need a break. Rest is biblical, okay? Nothing wrong with a break. Nothing wrong with sitting on the couch. What ends up happening, though, is I believe that we can bring shalom with us to work. I believe that we can bring shalom with us to our friendships. I believe that when we're at school, we can live on mission in the rhythm of our lives. And as we do that, and as we bring shalom there, then we don't find ourselves just always having this dichotomy between rest and work. We can bring Jesus with us where we are, and this is how we live on mission. See, Jesus, what he did was he came to this earth to establish a new kingdom. And what we see is Jesus, as he's on this earth, he's flipping everything upside down. The things that they used to value as a culture, he would flip them upside down. No, you used to value strength. I'm saying, let's value humility. The meek will inherit the earth. You're getting it all wrong, guys. And I know that you're supposed to fight your way to the top. I want you to serve. I know that you're supposed to, we're supposed to glorify the people that are strong spiritually. No, the ones that admit their weaknesses spiritually, they are going to be the ones that actually get it. And he flips everything upside down because his kingdom was different. Matter of fact, right before he died, he's before Pilate in John chapter 18. And Pilate's talking about, hey, are you going to establish the kingdom? Are you a king? And Jesus answers him. He says, my kingdom is not of this world. He says, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants wouldn't have been fighting. What he does is he's basically saying, yes, I'm a king, but you're missing it because there's one way to fight in this world, but my kingdom isn't of this world. So my kingdom is otherworldly. And he says, if my kingdom was of this world, then my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews, but my kingdom isn't from this world. So because my kingdom is otherworldly, they're going to fight in a different way. They're going to fight. We're just going to do it differently. And guys, I believe that we have been called to fight for God's kingdom. But the way we have to do this is we have to get off the couch. We've got to fight. You don't just say, okay, God, cool. It'd be awesome if you did it. And it'd be awesome if you did it yesterday because these people are annoying. It'd be awesome if you would establish your kingdom on this earth because I can't stand our government. What we're doing, though, is we're like getting mad and fighting about things on social media and thinking we're awesome because of that. We're bringing anti-shalom when we do that. Do you see that? Shalom is universal flourishing. It's peace. It is prosperity. And when we bring anger, resentment, me first, all these sorts of things, we bring the exact opposite of God's kingdom to this world. And what he is saying is he calls us to be ambassadors. You know that term ambassador, right? Ambassador is someone who lives in a different country but represents that country, represents their home country to a different country. Okay? And so in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he says, therefore we are ambassadors for Christ. So we are supposed to represent Christ to a not Christ culture. That's what an ambassador does. He represents a country, a different kingdom to the one that they really belong to the culture that they're living in. And we are ambassadors to Christ, and God, therefore, is able to make his appeal through us. This is what it means to live on mission. And I just want us, as we can understand this and as we can allow it to penetrate our hearts, I believe that what we're going to see is we are going to begin to see the Lord bring shalom to your world, to this city, and to the areas around us. But as we get frustrated and as we fight God and as we fight other people, we are going to miss out on God's bringing his kingdom to Evansville and to the world around us. So how do we do this? Let's just get very practical a little bit. How do we practically live on mission in Evansville? And I'm going to give you just four simple points. And the first one is going to be this. I want to ask you to listen to God as he molds your heart. Listen to God as he molds your heart. We see throughout scriptures, we see a lot of places where we can just read. When I think of a person after God's own heart, when I think of the term heart, the guy I think of in the Bible is who? David. Man after God's own heart. Now, David was far from perfect, but what we see regularly in scriptures is him wrestling with God, wrestling with God. I want you to take my heart. I want you to mold my heart. My heart is hurting in this area. God, will you do something about it? God, my heart is hurting in this area. Show me how to do something about it. We see, and this is what I'm asking you guys to do. First, listen to God as he molds your heart. In Bolivia, when we were living on mission for those 2 weeks, every morning, assigned, get up, first thing you do, you have some time with the Lord. And oh my goodness, when you're at 15,000 feet looking at mountains everywhere, it is so beautiful and you're able to see God, you know, and hear, just see God's handiwork so clearly and so visibly. And what we would do is we'd say, Lord, just, we would read his word. We would listen to the Lord. We would pray. And then what would end up happening is God would bring things to our minds. And he would bring things to our hearts. And we'd think about this little girl that we had met the day before that was just so needy in this area. We would see this. I remember one that got me was there was this little girl, the second day we were there, was brought in from an outlying village, and she was like on her deathbed, basically. And I remember her getting there, and she looked awful. She looked like she was about to die, and they're all speaking. I could catch a little bit of it, what they're saying, and they were just worried about her, and she could die. She's like 4 or 5 years old, and it was like, what's wrong with her? And so it was a simple fever, simple antibiotic was needed, and once we gave that to her, she was fine, but she would have died without that antibiotic that we had. And I remember going, wait a second, we have this access? And I remember my heart just going, are you kidding me? This girl would have died, but what ends up happening is, you know, as we're praying about that girl, as we're praying about these things, how do we help these types of people? And I know 10 years before, someone was probably saying, we need to get a medical center.